personally started down the commercial real estate route was because, well, there's three different reasons, really. One was that, of course, it's simpler in some senses and more difficult in others. It's simpler in that you now have a team and you can afford to hire a team or, you know, have different equity partners who are taking on different roles. So if you're not good at something, and everyone is bad at least one thing in real estate, right? So you have to have partners who are good at those things or you're bad at, and then vice versa. So understanding your strengths and weaknesses and being able to capitalize on those a lot more efficiently is one of my favorite things about commercial real estate investing.
Your network is your net worth. Come listen to some of the most successful people I know share invaluable knowledge, stories, and advice in real estate, business, and beyond. This is Weiss Advice. Whether you want to take your business or personal life to the next level, look no further. Welcome back to another episode of Weiss Advice. I'm your host, Yona Weiss, on another incredible episode. Excited to have here Dia Liu on the show, all the way from Mexico. Well, not originally, but you're out there on vacation and, you know, living the life. So welcome. Glad you can make it.
Thank you. Glad to be here with you.
Now, when I said you're kind of living the life, I mean, it's amazing. We met in Cincinnati at a conference not so long ago, and you specialize and just blew away with a great presentation all about short-term rentals and the hospitality industry in general, coming from a legal background, moving into this, kind of leaving your career and pursuing your dream in this. How's it going so far? I usually ask guests just to give a little background, but I want to jump forward. So we'll get to the background in a second. I just want to know, like, what's life like for you right now?
Life is really different from day to day. So I really can't complain, even though, you know, of course, there are high stress days. I can't sugarcoat everything. But for the most part, I tell people I get paid to take taco tours and check out beautiful places, resorts and destinations, and basically understand each travel market by being a tourist myself. And so that is definitely the more glamorized version of what I do on a day-to-day basis. The less glamorous stuff, I am also negotiating commercial contracts. We are closing on 76 unit hotel. So there's a lot of call franchise attorneys, real estate attorneys, tax folks, you know, just a lot of different folks really to close that deal. So that's like the more nitty gritty day-to-day details.
That's awesome. And so just a little background again, you're the CEO of a company called Welcome Capital. You invest in short-term rentals and hotels right now, boutique hotels. Like you said, you're just closing on another 76 unit one coming up. It's amazing. How did you, maybe just give a little background, how did you transition or transform from being a corporate, you know, litigation attorney to going full-time in the real estate business?
I guess I kind of fell into short-term rental space. So before law school, I double majored in biochemistry and chemical engineering. So I've always liked numbers and been really good at running numbers. And then I also had a short stint in the fashion industry. And so I've always loved design. And then I've loved technology and, you know, represent a lot of high-end or Fortune 500 tech companies as a patent litigation attorney. And so I liked the mental challenge of what I did and the fact that I was working with some of the smartest folks in the world on a daily basis. What I didn't really like was hours. The 9 to 9, I like to call it, lifestyle was not meant for me. And so I just decided that I wanted to do something to become financially free. I didn't really have any real estate contacts at the time, didn't really have anyone who talked to me about investing at the time, but due to just a lot of research and self just experimenting and et cetera, I decided that, you know what, I want to do more short-term rentals because I like design, I like technology, I like digital marketing makes sense to me, and also running numbers makes sense to me. So all those things kind of fell together to where short-term rentals was the best option forward.
That's awesome. They're just realizing that. I mean, I think a lot of people are stuck and people get stuck in their careers. And I mean, obviously you had the foresight to just take a break and just jump out of it, because you'd still be doing that to this day. Like a lot of people just trying to climb that ladder, make more money, do more cases, but the lifestyle, like you said, is just, it's a nightmare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So I did have to have a transition period where I was buying short-term rentals and setting those up on my holidays and my just days off, as few as they were. You know, I just kind of really try to work around the clock to, and then whenever I match my lawyer income with short-term rental income, that's when I basically quit my job. So
very cool. So, I mean, and I guess it's possible to do that, right? To manage your short-term rentals while working full-time. It's probably a little harder, but I think that's really the key a lot of people are doing is finding ways to replace their income. And then, like you said, just travel the world and see where new markets are that you can invest in.
Absolutely. And I think that that's, even if people's goals are not to quit their job because they love their job, I think the great thing about hospitality assets is that, of course, it offers cash flow and depreciation and all these other great things that people love about real estate, but it also offers a lot of lifestyle bonuses. So getting to visit somewhere beautiful, to visit your investment, you really can't do that with a stock portfolio or something else, but you can absolutely visit your short-term rental a few times a year to do repairs and maintenance and stuff like that, but also just to have that place paid off by other people staying at your place. And so I think that a lot of my students who are looking to buy their first or second short-term rentals, their goals might be to replace their W-2 income, or they might just be to own that dream beach house or ski cabin that they've always wanted to have and just be able to afford it because other people are paying for it.
And what's one of the best places that you've invested in? I know you've traveled a lot, you have properties in a lot of different locations, or have had. I know you've bought, sold and stuff, but where's the place? I mean, obviously, like you said, you want to buy a place where you actually like to visit and travel to and can have a place to go there.
Right now, I don't know if there's a best, but I will say that I personally love mountain towns just because they have both summer season where it's beautiful to hike there, but also, or maybe also mountain bike there, and then also winter season for skiing. Mm-hmm. And if they have both, then the off season is relatively short. It's only during April, May, or November timeframe, versus if you're looking at a beach town that is on the northern part of the US, and the season might just be for 6 months. And in that case, the off season is a lot longer. So I like these kind of destinations where, for whatever reason, there's multiple sources of tourism. And those are usually my favorite markets.
Very cool. Awesome. Yeah, it really has the best of both. Best of both worlds. You get the skiing, you get the hiking, beautiful mountains. Awesome. And now you're in Mexico, which, are you investing there as well? You are doing due diligence there, or just kind of getting off the grid a little?
Most of my trips are a combination trip, but this one is mostly for dance training, which is one of my most, I guess, obsessed, my most, I don't know how to say it, but I guess my favorite hobby, okay. The one that I spend the most time on. So, but we are also looking at some properties here just because we're here anyway. And we have a lot of folks who are developing and building new, beautiful short-term rentals in Tulum and the surrounding area. So we are also touring some of those as well.
Oh, very cool. And I'm sure there's some legal things you need to work around when it comes to investing out of the country, different taxation, yes, things like that.
Yes, absolutely. A lot of complex issues, a lot of attorneys.
Yeah, for sure. So you mentioned you're also training some students. What is that like? You have like a program or a coaching program, or is it more just like individuals that come to you and want to learn about short-term rental investing?
So I have two programs, one for short-term rentals investing. It's basically short-term rental investing 101, to where we're meeting every single week to analyze deals, as well as to learn a progressive training, basically to get better at short-term rental investing. And then I also have a more advanced program for those who are already relatively skilled in short-term rental investing. They have at least 2 or 3 short-term rentals and up, and they're interested in buying a boutique hotel and, or maybe something bigger, like 25, 26, 27 cabins, or, you know, like outdoor hospitality, or just lake, maybe do new build tiny houses lakefront, you know, those kind of larger commercial projects. That is my tier 2 program. So that's more for advanced folks.
So what's the biggest difference that you've seen transitioning from doing just single family, short-term rentals, to doing larger projects where you're talking about multiple rentals, like you mentioned, maybe a bunch of rentals in one location or a hotel or something like that?
I guess the biggest reason why I personally started down the commercial real estate route was because, well, there's three different reasons, really. One was that, of course, it's simpler in some senses and more difficult in others. It's simpler in that you now have a team and you can afford to hire a team or, you know, have different equity partners who are taking on different roles. So if you're not good at something, and everyone is bad at least one thing in real estate, right? So you have to have partners who are good at those things or you're bad at, and then vice versa. So understanding your strengths and weaknesses and being able to capitalize on those a lot more efficiently is one of my favorite things about commercial real estate investing. The other reason, and this is my original reason for going into commercial, was because I was frustrated at my short-term rentals, even though they're turnkey, they're fully furnished, they have cleaners, they have management ready to go, that when I went to go sell them, my neighbor's house that is not so renovated, doesn't really have furniture and et cetera, what that sells for still affected me. And so I can't really, you know, my furniture doesn't count towards the appraised value. How much I'm grossing every single year doesn't affect the appraised value. Mm. And it doesn't matter if my buyer is willing to pay $500K for a short-term rental that has grossed $100K in the last year, which I've had stuff like that. And it totally makes sense from a cash flow perspective for them to buy it. It's just that the banks will not appraise it for that much. And right. So, but it kind of, the reason they wanted it is because it's turnkey and they don't have to spend the next 3-4 months setting it up. So I just got really frustrated, really, the residential appraisal process. And I realized that commercial appraisals are based on the actual revenue potential or the current revenue of the property. And that just made a lot more sense to me.
Right.
And so that's why I decided to go into commercial. And then once I started going into commercial, I realized all these other benefits, like tax benefits or like regulation benefits, because now short-term rental regulations don't apply to me. They benefit me.
Right.
And just all these things started adding up to why I like hotels even more than I like short-term rentals now.
So aren't there like called DSCR loans where there are some lenders that will give a loan based on the actual revenue from the property, even for short-term rental? I mean, I would imagine something like that has to exist. I know it does for a commercial, and obviously that's why it's so much more beneficial. But especially with the growth of the industry, I would be surprised if those don't exist.
They do exist. It's just that still the appraised value of the asset still needs to appraise based on the sales comps of the area. And so, yes, you can absolutely, if you're selling something for $500K, they might be able to qualify in terms of DSCR loan, but the DSCR loan appraiser might still come back and give you a lower than your sales price appraisal. So,
gotcha. So
that's why I decided that residential was not the way to go. We're able to turn ugly mom and pop hotels where the mom and pop folks have run this hotel for the last 20 years. They're really tired. They don't have an online presence. And just us taking it over and making it cuter, but also just more importantly, putting it online and putting the marketing pieces in place. We, in theory, do not have to lift the hammer at all. We usually do renovate, but we don't actually have to renovate it in order for the building to be pushed higher in terms of valuation, because they might not have that many bookings when we take it over, because everything is manual, everything is pen and paper. And then when we take it over, we list it with all the major online travel agencies or OTAs. And then all of a sudden, now it's 2-3x the value because the income has increased that much.
Right. Oh, that's amazing. So you're not like turning over some of these hotels into, you know, your beautiful Airbnb type setups.
We are, but the great thing that sold hotels to me was that I didn't have to if I didn't need to, if I didn't want to. We always try to make our projects beautiful, but if we just, for whatever reason, or we're taking over a hotel right now where we're just going to operate it better for the first year, and we already can push the valuation higher, so we can do cash out refinance number one. Now, in the future, we're definitely going to renovate it, but we don't really have to in the meantime to have a cash flow or have it appraised for higher.
In terms of your project, because obviously if anyone's watching the video now, you can see the beautiful design in Dia's background there is actually the design of one of her Airbnb bedrooms there, which is pretty amazing. I love how you really pick out design and really focused on different styles. It's not just generic. There's a lot of thought that goes into that. And clearly in hotel, in experience, people want that as well, which is, you know, why a lot of people traditionally who would go to a hotel are going to try to find a short-term rental instead. But there may be different demographics, you know, traveling to hotels versus short-term rentals. So obviously you're dealing with different folks. I really want to kind of dig in a little deeper into finding out how you actually do that. I mean, are you managing the hotels like their hotels, or are any of them you're actually managing maybe some of the smaller boutique ones as like Airbnb suites or anything like that?
I normally tell my students that around 10 to 12 doors, you can probably just rent them as a giant, or not one giant Airbnb, but rather 12 separate Airbnb listings. And that probably will be fine, especially if it doesn't really make financial sense to hire someone to be on site full time. Now, if you're looking at 48 doors, which is kind of what our largest project to date has been, it made sense at some point to, instead of paying 20% to a short-term rental management company, to pay for one or two part-time or full-time staff. At that point, it's going to be more of a hybrid short-term rental and hotel model. By that, I mean that we are absolutely on Airbnb, but we're also on hotels.com, booking.com, et cetera, all these other OTAs. We also have our direct booking site. And then we also have the staff as a backup in case people don't understand how to do the contactless check-in, which some folks, because maybe they're just not used to contactless check-in, they don't understand smart locks, and so they might need additional instruction. So having someone on site during the check-in process is still helpful. Even let's say if 50%+ of the guests would just go straight to the room, you do minimize the need for staff interaction with guests. And so that does put a little bit less strain on your staff, but we will still have staff. And we're also looking into turning traditional hotel lobbies or event spaces into a co-working coffee lounge kind of feel to really cater towards the more millennial or digital nomad traveling folks who love to stay somewhere and they do care about budget, they care about the design, but they also care about community. So that's something that we're trying to build more in some of our destinations. And then finally, we have extra land on most of our hotel acquisitions. So we are looking into, for example, building tree houses on the back parcel of our 48 key hotel so that it won't just be renovated hotel rooms in the front. It will also have, so front building will be short-term rental, or front building will be renovated hotel rooms. And then back building will be larger residences that have full kitchens, kind of like Airbnb type 800 square feet places.
Oh, wow.
And then back parcel is going to be tree houses and A-frames in the future. Wow. So we will have all three types of assets on our property for different types of travelers, different traveler sizes in terms of group sizes, and just different aesthetics and preferences and budgets and et cetera.
Very cool. Can you disclose where that is, where that's located, or is that still to be determined, to be announced?
So that one is in Northwest Arkansas, which is one of our homes. So we do a lot of investments in Arkansas and Texas and the Carolinas for now. We are looking also for a fund in Colorado and Arizona, but kind of like in this mountain town vibe or coastal town vibe, really, in these kind of states.
Sure. I've heard a lot of great things about Northwest Arkansas. A lot of real estate growth in that location. I just didn't know it had that component of like short stays, short-term stays. I mean, every place does, but to me, that's new.
Yeah. Well, it's absolutely beautiful. It's in the Ozarks, which I feel like everyone feels probably thinks of the show immediately, but it's in the beautiful Ozarks Mountains. So there's a lot of lakes and there's a lot of trees and a lot of mountains. And so a lot of people definitely come for mountain biking, hiking, brewery, shopping, that kind of crowd. That's usually our favorite target demographic.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I know someone who recently connected with who operates in Missouri in the Ozark area there. And I had no idea that there was a whole wine country in Missouri, in the Ozarks, that was actually the first wine country, even before California or anywhere else in the country. And so there's all these little pockets of places around the country that I'm sure as you're traveling around, you come across some of these new destinations that actually have a lot of potential for bringing more traffic there. Would you say?
Absolutely. Yeah. I really like hidden markets just because I don't really like the ones that are heavily publicized everywhere. Just personally speaking, I like the ones that are a little bit uncover, so to speak, and there's a lot more opportunity. So that's why usually we're investing in these areas that probably fewer folks have heard of or fewer short-term rental operators have heard of.
There's been a lot of talk recently about, you know, kind of the short-term Airbnb bust, you know, like short-term rentals. There's been too much saturation in the market and too many people are doing it, but you tend to be successful. Your students are successful. And what's your vision on that? Was there just too many people getting involved in specific markets, or, you know, I just love to get your thoughts on that.
I think the market just really resetting. I think the folks who are crying Airbnb bust are the same folks who 2 years ago said it was really easy to get into short-term rentals and it was really easy, but it's not easy to do it correctly, meaning that you're underwriting the deals and analyzing the deals conservatively and seeing holistically what the market trends are. So how many active listings are there? How many listings are coming online versus how much the tourism source is growing? That is something that most short-term rental operators that have even 3, 4, 5 under their belt, they don't know how to analyze that. And it's really understanding, hey, this is a good time to buy. This is a good time to sell, you know, and just understanding all the market forces. And so I feel like right now it's not really a bust. If you understand how to operate at the top 75 to 90% of the market. So that is very design driven. That is also very marketing driven. I have, you know, this is not my personal investment, but I have stuff that, you know, for my family who are still in Austin, Texas, I have stuff that they have that I've helped them set up and et cetera. And in Austin is considered the short-term rental capital, you know, of the U.S. And so there's a lot of market saturation there, or people cry market saturation, but we have over 60K of bookings for this year already. And so I don't really see, knock on wood, any slowdown for that particular property. And that's just because I have decorated in a way and marketed in a way that is unique. And so a lot of people are paying as much as $800 to $1,000 a night still for our property. So, you know, and my parents actually own this house. This is our primary residence completely, you know, just with a very, very small mortgage, you know, way before the boom in Austin. So this is just almost purely cash flow for them.
I mean, that's amazing. And you did touch on it a little bit that you've designed the property a certain way and marketed it in a certain way. Can you maybe give our listeners a few tips, you know, maybe some wise advice, if you will, on how to market or how to design something to be able to stand out with your short-term rental? Because I think that's the key. I mean, you really hit on it. Obviously, you're an expert at this. But when I go on Airbnb to look at a property, I'm going to, you know, something is going to jump out to me maybe differently than someone else. But, you know, it really maybe depends on what you're looking for. But in the end of the day, the platforms are going to, or whatever marketing platforms you're on, are going to push, you know, certain aspects of it.
So there's a lot. Of course, it's almost like a search engine optimization, so to speak. So Airbnb is going to detect how many people click over to your listings, how long they stay on your listing, and as well as how many people end up converting and turning into a paid booking. And so over time, if more folks are landing on your page and then end up booking with you, then of course that's going to drive your ranking up. But of course, you also only have 5 seconds to make a first impression on someone. So it's really important to have that first 5 photos be really, really tell a story. And I think that a lot of folks, when they're coming from a long-term rental background, which I see a lot, is that they just furnish with whatever small budget they have. And that's one of the largest mistakes you can make, because a lot of people, when Airbnb or short-term rentals was going strong, everyone just put whatever random furniture that they had to turn their long-term rental into a short-term rental without really having a lot of thought about having a cohesive look theme and brand. And because of that, when the Airbnb market was a little more saturated, they are not going to get those bookings. So really coming together with a design plan or working with an interior designer who understands hospitality is one of the most important things ever. For me personally, the design is going to be different across different markets. So in my virtual background, it's a beach rental. And so what I stay away from is the kitschy beach look, like turquoise walls, fishnets everywhere, sailboats everywhere, you know, that kind of look, because there's probably 100+ listings that have those things in the search results. And so I'm going to look exactly like everyone else. And so what I want to do is, how do I make something feel like still a beach rental without having the same look as everyone else, which is how it came up with the background picture. Is it still kind of has driftwood pieces and wicker pieces and other shell pieces. So it still has that beachy vibe, but it's absolutely different than everyone else's product. And I try to just be different. And different usually gets eyeballs. And so we have, you know, in one of our rentals, everyone's doing the mountain bike theme. And I did a modern art theme because there's also tourists coming, not just for mountain biking, but also for art museums and stuff like that. So we're getting a very different class of folks staying. They're working on the art museums and stuff like that are staying at our short-term rental. And so it's just, you know, understanding your market, understanding what amenities are going to sell. And the other takeaway tip is that you don't decorate it like your flip or stuff like that. When you're decorating for short-term rentals, you're trying to create a story and evoke emotions and most, you know, like make sure that people feel like they're on vacation as soon as they step inside your property. When you're decorating for a flip, you're trying to offend the least number of people. So people can imagine themselves living there for a very long time, meaning that you're wanting muted colors and stuff, because people, as a general rule, they like to live in spaces that are a lot more neutral in colors versus a short-term rental, which I love to use a lot of bright colors and crazy themes and crazy wallpapers and stuff like that, because people are just staying there for a week. They're fine with having loud colors like in their short-term rental because that's not where they're living.
Totally. Those are amazing. I mean, I hope people are paying attention and going to go back and take notes on this, because what you just shared is just so fundamental. You know, the biggest thing, just not turning your long-term rental just simply into a short-term rental. I think that's a huge takeaway a lot of people forget about, and differentiating yourself, trying to find out how you can be a little bit different and still within the theme that your specific market will cater to. I mean, just such important things. May seem simple to people like you and me, but for anyone who's looking to get into this, these are just incredible tips. So I appreciate you sharing that, Dia. I want to transition now to what we call the final four. So these are four questions I ask all my guests. First question to you is, what's the worst job that you ever had?
So I've had a lot of odd jobs, from being an art teacher to special needs camp counselor and all that stuff. But I would say the worst job was probably retail for a professional female's clothing store when I was in college, just because I was supposed to sell this clothing that, you know, I did not enjoy wearing. And so it was just the most drab clothing. And I guess I did not sell anything, basically. I can sell a lot of things, and to sell something I'm not really passionate about was really, really hard for me. So that was probably my worst job.
I hear that. Yeah, it does not sound like a fun one. Okay, second question. What's a book you've read that's given you a paradigm shift?
I'm not going to pick some of the more obvious books that are often mentioned on podcasts. I will say that for me, as a former litigator, that one of the best books that I personally read was Never Split the Difference, just because I felt like my negotiating strategy has changed a lot more. And I'm always the person negotiating all the contracts for all our commercial acquisitions, and just understanding how to talk to people to in a less attorney-like manner, to where we're just more collaborating and figuring out a joint solution together instead of trying to be more like adversarial, has been really helpful for me in my personal life.
That's great. Awesome book. And we've definitely had it mentioned before on the show. And probably one of the most impactful books on communication in general. more than just negotiation, obviously touches on all the tips there and all the strategies of how to properly negotiate, but just incredible book there. Third question, what is a skill or talent that you would like to learn?
There's so many. I will say that for me, most of my goals in terms of what skills I want to learn for this year is has been different specific forms of dance. So that's why that's part of one of the reasons I'm here. Well, that is one of the main reasons I'm here in Mexico is right now is to undergo an intensive 100-hour dance training program for a specific type of dance. So
that's pretty cool. Awesome. Good for you. I imagine you have some sort of background in that. It's not just like a new passion.
I think if I didn't have my parents, which I love my parents, but they definitely pushed me towards a more traditional job, I probably would have been a creative artist of some sort. So I've just always loved dance. I've never had formal training, so to speak, growing up, but I've always taken a lot of dance classes since I was little.
Very cool. Awesome. Well, good luck with that and finding what you're looking for in Mexico and elsewhere. Fourth and final question, what does success mean to you?
I think success, of course, means different things to everyone. But for me, it means not just not having to worry about cash flow and about that, you know, money in general, but also to have the freedom to location and time freedom to do what you want to do and to, work on your passions aside from just real estate. You know, of course, I have a lot of passion for real estate, but I also have a lot of passion for other things in life. And so having that freedom to travel, to dance, to hike, to enjoy time with friends and family, I think, or to eat a lot of amazing cuisines around the world, I think that that is, for me, what's considered successful.
Love that. I love how everyone's definition is a little bit unique and has your personal touch on it. So thank you so much for sharing that. And, you know, finally, where can our listeners find you or reach out to you if they want to?
They can find me on pretty much all the major social media platforms. They can reach out and send me a message at DiaESQ. That's DiyaESQ on Instagram. That's probably the easiest way. I also have a 47,000 member Facebook group that we do a lot of Airbnb type content on. It's called Airbnb Professional Host. But if you find me, Dia Liu, and you need me to link you to anything like courses, trainings, whatever, the Facebook group, it's easier to reach out to me on Instagram.
Awesome. Well, we'll make sure to put all that in the show notes for anyone to reach out to. And I highly recommend they do because this was amazing. You have so much to offer and so much to learn from you. I appreciate you taking the time out today to share with our audience and with me personally. So thanks again for your time.
Thank you so much.
Awesome. And to our listeners, thank you guys for listening all the way to the end. We couldn't do this without you or just be me and Dia just hanging out, chatting. So thank you guys for listening. And remember, until next time, the best advice comes only when you ask. Real quick, I have one question for you. Did you like this episode? If you did, I want to ask you a huge favor. See, the biggest thing that helps this podcast grow and that will spread this message to the whole world is that if you leave a review, a rating, and subscribe to the podcast. What that does is it basically tells the platforms that this podcast is out on is that you like my stuff and I'm doing something right. So take a few seconds out of your day, hit that subscribe button, leave a rating or review. I would be extremely grateful. Also, I want to hear from you guys. So I want to hear some feedback. If you have any questions for future episodes, please find me on LinkedIn. Send me a DM, a connection request, Yona Weiss, and I'd love to hear from you.